Tonight, if you remember, you guys picked these topics, right? We did a survey, and this was right close to the top. We're going to talk about evangelism tonight, really subtitled, How to Love Like Jesus. Now, if I told you I have a bus outside, I don't, so don't freak out. If I had a bus outside, and the doors opened up, and I said, everybody into the bus, and we took you down to Temple Square and said, for the next hour, we're going to evangelize. Yeah, some of you would fire up for that. I get that. How many of you, in your heart of hearts, if that really was going to happen, would be a little bit stressed out? I'm going to raise my hand because until I get down there, I'd be stressed out. Once I get into it, oftentimes I get more relaxed, but just thinking about it stresses me out. Here's a quote that I gave during my announcement. Rebecca Pippert says, Christians and non-Christians have something in common. We're both uptight about evangelism. And we are. And I just want to share with you that we don't need to be. Just like Brady was talking, this is just an outgrowth of who he is. He just wants to engage people and love people and have spiritual conversations. let me give you an example. In the summer of 2009, evangelism was the last thing on my mind. I was in Iowa on vacation, and I didn't think about reaching out to people. I didn't think about teaching. I was on vacation, and I got a voicemail from somebody from the church, as I remember it, saying, hey, there's this guy that's not happy with you at all. He's really not happy, and he's not happy with the church. In fact, we think he's going to bring a lawsuit against your church. You should probably contact him. I don't remember all the details. You'll understand in a second. It was like, I'm on vacation. I shouldn't have to be thinking about these things on vacation. And so they had the number of the guy, and I thought, oh, fine, I'll call him. And so I called him, and he was not happy. His name was Patrick, and he was mad, and he was swearing at me, and he was cussing at me, and he was just berating me and our church. And I was pacing up and down my mother-in-law's driveway in the under a shade tree in the humidity and heat of Iowa thinking, I'm on vacation and I'm getting F-bombed here. What is happening? And long story short, he kind of unleashed on me. And as I let him talk, I said, hey, Patrick, can you just calm down here for a second? I just want to tell you, honestly, I think this is a huge mistake. I think you think I'm somebody I'm not, and our church is something that we're not. I think somebody gave you bad information. This is not the church that you're mad at. And we talked about it, and I would say things, I would ask him questions, and back and forth, and finally, he got it, that he was absolutely wrong. He had the wrong church, wrong information, and he calmed down and turned out to be a fairly nice guy. He had been sick, very sick, and he just was trying to help a friend, protect a friend. And once he realized that he's wrong, he apologized sincerely and profusely, to the point where it's like, Patrick, you know, that's cool. That's fine. Don't worry about it. And my heart started going out to him. And we talked some more, and I asked him more about himself. And I said, you know what? I think I really like you. I mean, I'm in Iowa. He's in Utah. And it's like, I like you, man. And I said, what's wrong with your health? He told me. I said, can I pray for you? So I prayed for him. And after that, before he hung up, I said, hey, Patrick, can I ask you a question? If you die tonight, how certain are you that you go to heaven? He said, not very certain. I said, would you like to be? He said, I would like to be. I said, do you have a couple minutes? Because I could share with you how you can have 100% confidence you're going to heaven. He said, I would love that. So I shared the gospel with this guy who had just been F-bombing me while I'm on vacation. And he got saved. And he prayed in tears to receive Christ right there on the phone, long distance. My point is, I was not out doing evangelism. It was not some event, an hour that I set aside to do evangelism. It was the last thing on my mind. I was thinking about cheese curds and pork chops on a stick and bacon-wrapped riblets on a stick and fresh-squeezed orange juice and taking my kids to the water park and going up to Hickory Park in Ames, Iowa and have our traditional barbecue lunch. That's what I was thinking about. I wasn't thinking evangelism, but here an opportunity presented itself. You see, evangelism isn't an event. It's not something you turn off and on. It's a lifestyle. It's a mindset. It's a heart. I just want to love people. I saw an opportunity to love Patrick. The best way I know how to love somebody is to help them understand the forgiveness that Jesus offers them. And there's an opportunity. The sad thing is, 3 months later, because I called the person from Utah and said, I talked to Patrick. It's okay. We got it all worked out. They were very happy about that. And they sent me this 3 months later. Patrick died 3 months later. He was a military man. His wounds, his sickness was because of his combat wounds. And he ended up succumbing to those and dying 3 months after I talked to him. And I thought to myself, out loud, I thought to myself, could it be? Could it be that God in his sovereignty caused this guy to get wrong information, to get upset at me, call me on my vacation, cuss me out, so that I would share the gospel with him? First of all, take the phone call. I didn't want to take the phone call. But to take it, share the gospel with him, and that he would become a born-again, Bible-believing Christian 90 days before he breathed his last breath. Could it be? I kind of think it's true. Again, my point is evangelism isn't something we just go out and do. Evangelism is who we are. And so I just want to help us tonight not to fear, not to be trepidatious when it comes to evangelism. I love 1 John 4:18. There's no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. I love Jesus, and by God's grace, to some degree, I love people. And God helps me with that. Because I love people, I want them to know Jesus, and therefore I'm not afraid most of the time to step out and just talk about Jesus. And that's why Brady's able to speak to LDS missionaries, because he loves them. He wants what's best for them, and what's best for them is Jesus, okay? All right, Paul said, for the love of Christ compels us or constrains us, because we judge thus that if one died for all, then all died. And he died for all, that those who live should live no longer for themselves, but for him who died for them and rose again. How can we love the way Jesus loves? How can we love lost people? I'm going to look at three quick things tonight. The last point, I'll give you some real practical steps on how we can love like Jesus. The first, and there's handouts if you didn't get one, they're back there. Three big points. How do we love like Jesus? Three keys of loving like Jesus. Number one, I think this is so important, that we have a concern for the lost, that we have a burden that people are going to hell. And that, again, comes from our love for Christ. Understand how much God loved us, how much he did for us, and did not just for us, but for the world. And that there are people literally dying today that will be in hell forever. God wants us to be concerned about that. And I think about the story of Moses in Exodus chapter 3, verse 7 through 11. And you know the story. God appears to Moses and is speaking to him. And God says, Moses, I've indeed seen the misery of the Israelites, of my people in Egypt. I know they're suffering greatly, and I'm concerned about them. And I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out into a good and spacious land. That's what he tells Moses. And Moses is going, yes, yes, finally. I'm going to bring them into a land of milk and honey. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. And I'm sure Moses was just so thrilled that God was finally going to come and rescue his people. And he's probably going, go for it. Go get them, God. And then we know what God says to Moses. So now go. I'm sending you, buddy. Go. And I'm sure Moses is like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, no, wait a minute. These are your people. You go. You're the one that wants to rescue him. What do you mean, me go? No, he said, go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? That's us when we think about evangelism. Who am I? I don't want to do this. Moses was saying, I'm afraid, God, why don't you just go do it? God, why don't you do some sky writing? Share the gospel in this, John 3:16 in the sky for people. Why send me? I feel inadequate. I feel stressed by the idea of evangelism. But we need to be concerned about the lost. Moses needed to be concerned about his people. In Matthew 9, we see that we need to have an eternal perspective. Jesus said when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. This is Jesus. Because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. That's what we see coming through our doors. And some of us talked about that Monday night. Friday night. We had a dinner. And I shared this verse because it's been hitting me pretty hard. This is who comes through our doors every weekend. Tons of people are coming through our door. And they're not possibly harassed and helpless. They are harassed and helpless. Like sheep without a shepherd. They don't know where to go. And I don't know, Ben, are you here tonight? I didn't think he would be. But there's a guy named Ben. I'm sure he wouldn't mind me sharing just a little bit. But he came through last week, and then this weekend he came back. But he met a bunch of you guys. Met Brian. He met some other guys. And Brian tapped on my shoulder and said, hey, I want you to talk to Ben. And he's a tall guy. He's LDS. And he said, you know, he told me, I just can't go back there anymore. He grew up LDS. His whole family's LDS. He's got 7 children. His wife's LDS. And he said, I've been doing some research. I just can't go back there. He wasn't bitter or angry. He just was making a statement. I told my wife that last night, and she left me. I had to call the police. She didn't come back. He's crying now. He's like, I don't know what to do. He was harassed and helpless. He didn't know what to do. It's like he didn't have a shepherd. I said, what brought you here? He said, I didn't know what else to do. So I told him, there's hope. God can help you. Jesus can help you. Don't burn any bridges. Go home and love your wife. But it's okay if you want to consider leaving, but just don't burn bridges. And he came back this weekend, and he said he had a better week, but he came back. And he was this guy right here. This is who's coming through our door, and his eternity is at stake. So the next verse says this. Jesus said to his disciples, a harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. That's where we come in. That's where we come in. If we have an eternal perspective, and I want to tell you something. If you haven't read the book, Imagine Heaven, or listened to it, Imagine Heaven. I've been listening to it the last couple months. I'm just a slow listener and slow reader. It has encouraged my heart so much, but it's given me a burden for lost people. Again, it's just fired me up because he interviews thousands of near-death experience people. And he doesn't base theology on that, but he compares theology to what they're saying. And a lot of people that experience what it would be like to go to hell describe it over and over. And so many people describe it, and it's terrifying. And just honestly, guys, it's broken me. It's like, I don't want anybody, if it's even close to that, I don't want anybody to go there. I want to love people better, like Jesus did. I want to consider eternity, okay? People are going to hell, and it matters. Did you hear what I said? People are going to hell, and it matters. It matters to me. It matters to this church. It should matter to you. It should matter to you. I had a pastor friend. He's not pastor anymore, but he had a big church downtown Salt Lake, a denominational church. But he was a believer, great guy. I loved Jesus. He'd come to our monthly pastor meetings. He was a pretty good part of it when he was pastoring. And he came in one time, and he was just discouraged. And he's like, "Guy, I don't know what to do, guys." His church had church polity where the board ran the church. He didn't really have much say. He was just the pastor. So the board is running it, and they were going to spend, it was a big church, and they're going to do all this work that was going to cost multi-millions of dollars to paint this and to, you know, tip this with gold here and do this. And he was like, "But what are we spending on outreach?" And he showed them the budget. He says, "We're not spending anything. How can we spend millions on it?" And he was trying to wake up the board, and the board voted him down. And he was so mad. He said, "Guys, I got to admit, I just lost it." I said, "Fine, guys, then here's my next proposal, is that we as a church, we get a big banner printed, and we put it right over our stage so that when new people come in, they see the banner. It says, 'You're going to hell, and we don't care.'" That was his proposal. They voted that down too. We need to care. I love what Leonard Ravenhill says, he said this, "Lord, stamp eternity on my eyes, heaven on one and hell on the other, that I might see every soul in light of eternity." They're either going to heaven or they're going to hell. That's a reality. That is a reality we need to think about. So we need to be concerned about the loss if we want to love like Jesus. Number two, well, wait a minute. Do I have more on this point? I do. One more point. And this is a good one, too. Selfishness keeps us from loving. I love this little video clip I'm going to show you from Penn Jillette, from Penn and Teller. He's an illusionist. You guys have heard of him. He's one of the most outspoken atheists that are around. Well-known, outspoken atheist. But he used to do a video blog after each of his shows in Vegas. So he'd go back to his dressing room, get his camera, and just talk to it for 5 minutes. And about something that happened during the show. That was just kind of his thing. This one in 2008 is so interesting to me. I've shown it before. I'm not going to show the whole thing, but he videotapes himself, and he's shook to his core. You can just tell something is shaking. Something has shaken him, this strong atheist. And what it was after the show, a Christian walks up to him, introduces himself, and says, "I like your show. I've got something for you." And hands him a Gideon Bible and talks to him about the Lord. And Penn Jillette is like, this guy, he's trying to figure it out. He goes, "This guy was a good guy. I could tell this guy's a good guy. He wasn't crazy. And he gave me this Bible." And he tries to describe a Gideon's Bible. And that's where we're going to pick it up. But I want you to listen to what he says about Christians that don't proselytize, because it'll blow you away, from one of the most well-known atheists in our country. Let's just watch the end of what he has to say here, about 3 minutes.
"And then he said, 'I brought this for you.' And he handed me a Gideon Pocket Edition. I thought it said from the New Testament, but I also thought it was Psalms from the New Testament, right? Psalms from the New, just part of the New Testament. Little book about this big, this thick, you know. He said, 'I wrote in the front of it, and I wanted you to have this. I'm kind of proselytizing.' And then he said, 'I'm a businessman. I'm sane, I'm not crazy.' And he looked me right in the eye and did all of this. And it was really wonderful. I believe he knew that I was an atheist. But he was not defensive. And he looked me right in the eyes. And he was truly complimentary. It wasn't in any way, it didn't seem like empty flattery. He was really kind and nice and sane and looked me in the eyes and talked to me. And then gave me this Bible. And I've always said, you know, that I don't respect people who don't proselytize. I don't respect that at all. If you believe that there's a heaven and hell and people could be going to hell or not getting eternal life or whatever, and you think that, well, it's not really worth telling them this because it would make it socially awkward. And atheists who think that people shouldn't proselytize, just leave me alone, keep your religion to yourself. How much do you have to hate somebody to not proselytize? How much do you have to hate somebody to believe that everlasting life is possible and not tell them that? I mean, if I believed, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that a truck was coming at you and you didn't believe it, that truck was bearing down on you, there's a certain point where I tackle you. And this is more important than that. And I've always thought that, and I've written about that, I've thought of it conceptually. But this guy was a really good guy. He was polite and honest and sane, and he cared enough about me to proselytize and give me a Bible, which had written in it a little note to me, not very personal, but just, you know, liked your show and so on. And then like five phone numbers for him and an email address if I wanted to get in touch. Now, I know there's no God, and one polite person living his life right doesn't change that. But I'll tell you, he was a very, very, very good man. And that's really important. And with that kind of goodness, it's okay to have that deep of a disagreement. I still think that religion does a lot of bad stuff, but man, that was a good man who gave me that book. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, I can't help but think that he was convincing himself when he was saying that I don't believe there's a God. I just think inside of him somewhere, it just flared up again. I think it bothered him. I think it challenged him. But I love the fact that it wasn't even what the guy said so much. It was how he presented himself as very, very, very kind, very authentic. And he told him, I'm proselytizing you. He wasn't trying to hide it. And he respected him for that. But think about that. An atheist, the clarity he has on this issue of having an eternal perspective. If a truck's bearing down on you, at some point, I'm going to tackle you. And this is more important than that. An atheist. Oh, guys, man, we got to get that. Let's move on. Second point, be confident in your medicine. Do you believe in God's power to save? Do you believe that? Like it says in Romans 1:16. For the gospel is what? The power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. It's God's gospel that is the power of God. Not you, not your presentation. It's God's gospel. That's why the guy gave him a Bible, because that's the power. And we know that. Do you believe that? Has it worked in your life? Can you say anything about your life is different because of God's work in your life? Can you point to anything? Can your wife point to anything? People around you say, yeah, you're different than you were. If you can, then I suggest you read this quote with me. If you want your neighbor to know what Christ will do for him, let that neighbor see what Christ has done for you. Just tell your story. That's all evangelism is, just living out loud. If you had the cure to cancer, would you keep it quiet? And if you would keep it quiet, is that not criminal? Wouldn't that be criminal? To hold it to yourself and not share it freely? You have something that's more important than the cure to cancer. The gospel is a power of salvation. People's eternity is dependent on this. And we have that. We have that. We should share it. You know, I've seen some of these years ago, there was a show called Super Nanny. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but I didn't watch it that often. And I couldn't watch it because it drove me crazy. Because they're just rotten little kids. They were so disobedient that they had to call Super Nanny in to try to straighten them out. And her tools that she had were so lame, it just drove me crazy. Whether it's sit over here, and she placated and, you know, just distract. It's like, you know, so the thought is like, give me that kid for 1 week. And I think that, not because I'm so great, because I know the Bible has great ways to train kids. It does, and it works. Her medicine doesn't work. The Bible works. The gospel works. So Jesus is the only hope for kids. It's the only hope for salvation, and we have the answer. So let's get out there and do it. Let's live it. Let's test it. I love the story of D.L. Moody. And this was, I think this was, I wrote the day, yeah, 1870. He was in Indiana in 1870. He was the keynote speaker at a conference teaching about evangelism, because he was a very successful evangelist. And one afternoon, he had just met Ira Sankey, who became his lead singer at that time. He didn't know him before, but he met him. And he said, Ira, I want you to meet me at 6 o'clock out on this busy street corner in Indianapolis. So he met him at 6 o'clock. He had to start teaching at 8. So Ira met him out there with his whatever. I think he had a guitar or he had something. And Ira sang. on the street corner, gathered a crowd. And D.L. Moody started to preach, and a huge, massive crowd started to gather. And he kind of like a Pied Piper said, come with me down to the tabernacle. And he filled the tabernacle with unbelievers and began preaching the gospel. But then some of the administrators of the conference started coming in because it was about time for the conference to start on evangelism. And D.L. Moody looks at his crowd of non-believers and said, now we must close as the brethren of the convention wish to come and discuss the topic, how to reach the masses. Isn't that brilliant? He just showed them. It was such a good picture. He showed them how to reach the masses. And they're going, come on, we want to learn how to reach the masses. And you just missed it. A whole room full of non-believers hearing the gospel. We need to live it. We need to be like D.L. Moody. Just live it. Test it. See if it doesn't work. All right. Number three, last point. Be intentional with your relationship. So if we're going to love like Jesus, we need to be concerned about the lost, have an eternal perspective. Number two, be confident in the gospel, not your presentation. Just live it. Tell people what's happened in your life. Number three, be intentional in your relationships. Remember what God said to Moses when Moses exasperated God? Moses said, oh, Lord, please send someone else. And then the Lord's anger burned against Moses. God was not happy with his servant saying, I don't want to do what you've called me to do, to love the people the way you want me to love them. I can't do it. It says God's anger burned against Moses. So we don't want that to happen. So I'd love us to have five practical tips on winning your friends with love. Okay, five practical things. First one is very simple. Pray for opportunities. This is so important. And actually, I made a top 10 list. You should grab one of these. It's just a prayer list. It's not official quality of Rock Church creatives. I just did it in 10 minutes on my computer because I wanted to have something to hand out to you. If you didn't get one, it's on the chair there. Yeah, Brian's got a bunch. Just a prayer list. Pray for people. I don't know if you realize how important this is. Like for my family, for instance, I prayed for years, decades. God, here's what I pray. God, give me an opportunity that I can't say no to be able to share the gospel with my mom, with my dad, my sister, my brother, my grandma, my grandpa, my aunts and uncles. And I listen by name. And it'd just be like rote. I just go through the names. God, give me an opportunity that I can't turn down. And for every one of them, well, not all my aunts and uncles yet, but with my close family, mom, dad, brother, sister, I've led them all to Christ, led my grandmother to Christ. And they've all been astonishing stories of them, in some cases, coming to me in tears, wanting to possibly even commit suicide, into the rope, saying, before I kill myself, I wanted to talk to you. It's like, okay, there's the opportunity I was praying for, clearly. And I led them to Christ, shared the gospel, and they're wanting to hear it, whereas before they weren't. So you need to be praying for opportunities. With my other relatives, my aunts and uncles, I sent them a DVD steal of You and Me, Baby, sharing the gospel. With a diagram DVD, sent them all my relatives with a letter telling them I love them, but I'm done being afraid to share truth with them because I don't want them to go to hell. Some of them didn't appreciate it, but I shared the gospel. I gave them a DVD. I gave them a track and said, if you have any questions, none of them even acknowledged they got it, but I know they got it, and I've seen some fruit of that. So we got to pray. At work, pray for the people around you. Pray for your food in front of people. It's a great way to raise your flag, and people might come to you and say, yeah, I just saw you praying. Are you a Mormon? Are you a Christian? Who are you? So just do things like that. Work hard. Look for opportunities. At church, I mean, Josh just led a guy to Christ last weekend. People are getting saved all the time. There's opportunities. I pray that every weekend. God, help me love people. No, help me love you more because of the service. Help me love people and give me an opportunity to share the gospel. Every weekend, that's what I pray on my drive here. You can pray that. Other opportunities. I, as a pastor, I get opportunities you might not, but I preach a lot of funerals lately. My own family, people that go to our church, and I always share the gospel. And it's bearing fruit. There's people that are in the funeral at the funeral coming to church now that weren't coming before. So I just share the good news of Jesus. I don't care if they're a believer or not. I don't care if they're religious or not. I'll tell them that. I know that so-and-so wasn't very religious, but if they could come back right now, you want to know what? Here's what they would say to you. And what would they say? If they're in hell, they say the same thing if they're in heaven. Trust in Christ. Listen to what this guy's saying. I share the same thing. And it bears fruit. So pray for opportunities. 5 months ago, there's my 89-year-old dad and his girlfriend, who's 82, Judy. She's very sweet. Both of them lived next to each other in memory care unit. They both nursed their spouses until they died. Judy's husband died 10 years ago. My mom died a couple years ago. But they got to be good friends and ended up moving out together because it saved them like $2,200 a month just to live in an apartment. And they're just good friends, okay? But Judy asked my dad, who I led to Christ, do you think Billy would come out and share the Lord with me and baptize me? And my dad asked me, I said, no. No, I got other things going on. No, I flew out as soon as I could, and I shared the gospel with. I used my laptop. That's primarily what I use now. I have the diagram on laptop, which I'm going to show you in just a second here. I'll show it to you, but not right now. That's what I did, and that's the last slide. She's in tears all the way through the presentation. She kept saying, but what about forgiveness? What about forgiveness? Because I was giving her all the bad news, you know. And she said, what about forgiveness? I said, I'm getting there, Judy. Calm down. I'm getting there. So we got to it. She says, yes, I want forgiveness. So we need to pray for opportunities and build a bridge of listening and caring. You just got to care for people. Remember names and birthdays. Steal. You're such a good example of remembering kids' names, especially like it in Croatia. Every little kid, Steel knew their name. What was that little tiny one? Malachi? Yeah, Malachi, sing this song for me. Sing Warriors for me. I just want to hear you. Come over here. And he's about this tall. And Steele would just get him singing. And Steele's great at remember. I don't know how you do it, brother. But we need to be good at stuff like that. Be generous. Remember birthdays. Remember anniversaries. Remember special times. Send cards. Affirm people often. Invite them to church. When Mary and I were first married, she had a job. Whoops. Got to go back. She had a job with a friend. And she didn't want to overpower her as a coworker, and so she didn't, lay it on too heavy, and she waited a couple weeks and a few more weeks, and finally she invited Susan to church, and Susan said, yeah, I'd love to go. I've been waiting for you to ask me, and honestly, I thought maybe I was something's wrong with me that you wouldn't ask me, because I knew your husband was a pastor, and Susan got saved, and then I led her husband to Christ. I just saw a recent picture of Susan this week, fellowshipping with some people. That was close to 40 years ago. But just invite them. They might want to come, like Susan, okay? Number three, find out what they like to do and do it. I didn't put there, find out what you like to do and do it with them. This is a key to evangelism, loving people like Jesus. Find out what they like to do. And do it. Well, I don't like doing that. Well, do it anyway. Find out what they like to do. I've done a lot of stuff I don't like to do. I don't like basketball. Probably because I suck at basketball. That's why I don't like it. Drywalling ceiling. I've done that with one of my disciples in Loveland, Colorado for week after week after work. I just get with him and cover with. I didn't want to do that, but it made such an impact on his life. It's still there today. That impact, just drywalling. We didn't even talk. I just drywalled with him, helped him with his basement. I played pinball for Christ, frisbee for Christ. I've rock climbed for Christ. I've gone skiing on the bunny slopes when I'd rather be on the blue slopes because I'm not very good. But I went on bunny slopes with a brand new guy I was discipling all day. This is when we lived in Iowa. We didn't get out here very often. Guitar. I tried to learn guitar so I could disciple a guy. This is true of your kids. Learn how to play Candyland if you got kids. I don't like Candyland. Doesn't matter. Your kids like Candyland. See, that's how it works. Do what they want to do. Join them. And I found that oftentimes God makes me like it after a while. Okay, so fourth thing. Only got a couple more points. Get equipped and trained to share your faith. We have Do You Know For Certain tracks. These are tracks you can literally literally just go through with people, page after page, just read the questions, turn the page, read it, turn the page. We have these available. The diagram online, I'm going to have Brady fire that up. We put this online today. Brent helped me. This is what I use. Now we put it on our website under Jesus Gospel at the bottom, under diagram. Now you can look at the video or you can get the presentation. If you put it in presentation mode, you can start flipping through it. This is what I share with people. Is it in presentation mode? No. Put it in presentation mode if you can. Okay. Well, this is what it kind of looks like. It's frozen. Keep it going. Yeah. It just builds the whole diagram. Keep going. We'll just flip through it. So you just read these things. What would you say if God asked you, why should I let you into my heaven? And then ask him that, and then it builds the diagram all the way through. There's 85 slides. So everybody put your hand out and do this. Do that, everybody. So if you can do this, you can share the gospel. I've led dozens of people to Christ doing this and talking to them. I just read it, guys, and it just builds the diagram that Steele was talking about Friday night. The culture that has built our church is this diagram, and it leads you through it. I suggest you go and look at it, practice with it. If you're with somebody, just go to our website and then go to present mode, which is up in the right hand. There's three little dots. Click that, and then present mode, this down arrow key. It builds the whole thing. It's a beautiful thing. Okay. There's other tools, gospel tracks. There's other things that we can do. You can go back now. There's different three circles, one verse method, lots of methods you can learn. Have a method, have something, but really it's just sharing your life. Last big point, just do it. Get out there and do it. Don't be afraid to share your faith with people. Just like Isaiah, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And Isaiah said, here I am, send me. We should have that same attitude. Last quote, I love what Oswald Chambers says, angels cannot preach the gospel. Angels cannot preach the gospel. Only beings such as you and I can preach the gospel. They wish they could, but they can't. So, what do we learn? Let's stop fearing and start loving others like Jesus did. Number one, be concerned about the lost. Don't be selfish. Number two, have confidence in your medicine. Number three, take personal responsibility. Lord, send me. And be praying, okay? All right, so we have 15 minutes or 10 minutes, 15 minutes for discussion. Here are some discussion questions right here. See if you can get through some of those. Huddle up, 3 to 4 people in a group. Just turn your chairs around and talk about these, and we'll be done in about 15 minutes, okay?